Hey, listeners, we're launching a new Masters of Scale survey, and we'd love your input. Your feedback will help us get to know you, our audience, and create content that better meets your wants and needs. Go to mastersofscale.com/survey25 to weigh in. Again, go to mastersofscale.com/survey25 to give your feedback.
JustWorks is the human resources platform that knows your employees are more than just employees. They're your people. People like the show producer on the East Coast who's constantly juggling schedules, studio bookings, and last-minute edits before an episode drops, and sometimes has a question about payroll that they need an answer to right away. Luckily, they can reach out to JustWorks for 24/7 human support and not have to wait for their boss on the West Coast to wake up. JustWorks does human resources right so you can do right by your most precious asset, your people. To learn more, go to JustWorks.com. JustWorks, for your people.
I didn't really think it through because I didn't have great grades. I'd done no internships. I really looked up to my sister. After college, she worked at Goldman Sachs. So I said, Jenny, can you help me get a job like one of the ones you had? And she's like, no, I can try, but it doesn't work that way.
Ben Van Leeuwen left that meeting with his sister feeling discouraged. He'd graduated college, but he had no idea what to do with his life. Until,
after meeting her one day in the city, I saw Mr. Softy truck.
Mr. Softy, that classic New York City ice cream truck.
I didn't have an idea in that moment. I made a decision in that moment.
The decision? Build an ice cream business. Ben's favorite summer job as a teenager had been driving an ice cream truck. What if that was his calling all along? He scraped together just enough money to get started.
We bought 2 used post office trucks on eBay. We found someone to retrofit them into ice cream trucks. You know, all the credit cards were maxed out. On day one, we probably had, you know, $500 in our bank accounts collectively.
More than a decade later, Van Leeuwen is one of the fastest growing dessert brands in America.
In 2025, we started with 70 corporate-owned scoop shops. We'll actually grow 50% on our scoop shop footprint this year. Wholesale is in 15,000 doors. By July, we'll hit about 2,000 total team members. So, growing rapidly.
You got to have incredible talent at every position.
It's like this huge push.
There are fires burning when you're going home.
Can you believe it?
Such an idiot. And then you go back to, this is totally going to be amazing.
There are so many easy wins.
I'm so sorry to do. I have no idea what to do.
Sorry, we made a mistake.
But you have to time it right.
Oops.
Working out of a 3-bedroom apartment.
Stuff that just seems absolutely nutballs. 10 years later, I'm like, well, that's just how you do it.
We haven't made
just how you do it.
This is Masters of Scale.
I'm Jeff Berman, your host. This week on the show, a conversation with the CEO and co-founder of Van Leeuwen Ice Cream, Ben Van Leeuwen. He's the mad scientist behind the company's wildest flavors. You may have seen their viral Kraft mac and cheese or Hidden Valley Ranch ice creams online, and also its incredibly delicious approach to classics. The New York Times Wirecutter called its vanilla the very best on the market. Fair warning, this episode might make you drool. Ben, welcome to Masters of Scale.
Thank you.
I love your product. It is so much fun for me when I get to have a conversation with a founder who has started a company I just love. So starting an ice cream company is not the obvious path for every entrepreneur. Take me back. Where did this come from? Where did the entrepreneurial drive come from?
Entrepreneurial drive, I think it's in my blood. My dad has been a serial entrepreneur.
S-E-R-I-A-L, not C-E-R-E-A-L.
Yes. Since he was in high school. So yeah, I think it's part of my DNA. But Van Leeuwen Ice Cream actually came from my first summer job before college. That was the impetus. I drove a Good Humor ice cream truck where I grew up in Greenwich, Connecticut, and I loved it. I loved the hospitality aspect, interacting with people. The product itself was prepackaged, strawberry shortcake bars, which actually Van Leeuwen makes a Van Leeuwen version of that now, yep. Which is really good.
I was always partial to the Good Humor chocolate eclair bars. Those were my favorites.
Yeah, really good. Uh-huh. I did that for 2 summers. After the second summer of doing that, I decided I didn't want to go back to college. I had saved up enough money from driving that truck to go backpacking throughout Europe and Southeast Asia. Mm. But that was a very formative experience, and the decision to do that kind of changed the course of my entire life, because it wasn't a rational decision, like especially having grown up in Greenwich, Connecticut. But that path there, at least the way I saw it, was you go to the best college you can, you get the best grades you can, and you hopefully get a job in finance, right? I never had great grades, maybe 2.8, 2.9 GPA. So when I decided to go travel, you know, it was sort of the opposite of that path. And I wanted friends to come along with me. Mm. I didn't want to go alone. Like, I'm a really social person. I don't do well on my own. But all of my friends were like, no, Ben, we can't do that. You know, it's going to look so bad on our resumes to take a year off college. And I was like, but I want to do it. So I think the lesson there was like, go with what attracts you. I guarantee you, if I didn't go on that trip, I wouldn't have started an ice cream company.
Why not?
A, it was formative in like learning about food and learning about really good ingredients. But more than that, why is Van Leeuwen going to open its 100th store this year? Not because we're brilliant, not because we came up with an incredibly novel product. It's really good ice cream. It's the way any good, well-trained pastry chef would make ice cream. But Van Leeuwen's going to open their 100th store this year, and we're going to be the almost biggest artisanal ice cream company in the U.S., the biggest consumer market on earth, simply because we decided to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for, it's not just making a decision. It's making a decision that flies in the face of everything you've been raised to do, you've seen around you, the definition of success around you. It sounds like you really just listened to what was inside of you.
Totally.
So on that trip through Europe, through Southeast Asia, what did you learn about food and ingredients? And then what'd you learn about yourself?
I remember going to the first grocery store I'd ever been to in Italy, and it wasn't a fancy grocery store. They don't really have fancy grocery stores there. Yet every grocery store is almost as fancy as the fanciest store in America, because I always say there's no foodies in Italy. It's just Italians, right? Yes, you care about your olive oil and your cheese and the quality of your pasta. And that, without even realizing it, then I was like, it was so exciting to me that food, this thing you do 3 times a day, which is something I was excited about, is normal to be excited about in other places and to care about and to put a lot of time into and to, you know, value, you know, in a really high way, right? Because I value it a lot. I mean, my food experiences every day, it's like, you know, some of the most important parts of my day is eating and what am I going to eat? So I learned a lot about that there.
So you came back to the States from your travels. At what point did you say, we're really going to do this? I'm gonna launch an ice cream truck.
Well, I came back to the States. I went to college. I finished college. I really looked up to my sister. After college, she worked at Goldman Sachs. Then she worked at Neuberger Berman. Then she started her own private wealth management firm. And I looked up to Jenny because she was really responsible and she made a good living. And I said, I want to do that. And I didn't really think it through because I didn't have great grades. I'd done no internships. So I said, Jenny, can you help me get a job like one of the ones you had? And she's like, no, I can try, but it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And after meeting her one day in the city, I saw Mr. Softy truck. I didn't have an idea in that moment. I made a decision in that moment. So that's where the decision piece comes in. I didn't say, oh, I have an idea to start an ice cream company. I said, oh, that's what I'm going to do. It was so clear and I was so excited. I saw this Mr. Softy truck. And by the way, I don't think this was a great idea, but I said, I'm going to get an ice cream truck and I'm going to learn how to make ice cream and I'm going to find the best ingredients I can.
Had you made ice cream before?
Never.
No history in it.
No.
So where do you even start then?
Long before I had made ice cream, I started writing the business plan.
His brother Pete and his then romantic partner Laura O'Neill loved the idea too. They became Ben's co-founders.
And then once we had more confidence that we could do it, I said, okay, we better figure out how to make the ice cream. I had Thomas Keller's Bouchon cookbook. There was a recipe for crème anglaise, which you can turn into vanilla ice cream in there.
Right.
And I made that and had a lot of cream and a lot of eggs. And what was really exciting about making that and tasting it, we said, whoa, this is, you know, the best vanilla ice cream I've ever had.
Huh.
And it was really easy to make. And all it has is cream, eggs, sugar, milk, a little bit of sea salt and whole vanilla beans.
Okay.
And you put it in the freezer and it stays good for months or years. So we're like, whoa, you can make the best ice cream ever. And it's completely preservable. You don't need to add any weird stuff.
Okay, so you've got a business plan. You've got a recipe for one ice cream.
Yeah.
What's the leap to actually starting a company? Raising money, figuring out your supply chain, all of that. How'd you get from A to B there?
For some reason, we came up with $250,000 is the number.
Okay.
Be enough to buy a brand new Chevrolet truck, pay a lot to turn it into an ice cream truck, probably have $100,000 on the balance sheet to get us through the first year or two if we weren't making money. And we set out to try to raise money and everybody said no.
What were they telling you when they were saying no? What were you hearing?
It's funny, I have such a way of not remembering anything that I don't love.
It's good to have a short memory.
I was annoyed by it and disappointed, but I wasn't discouraged. Mm. I was like, I'm hardworking. I have a good palate. I know I'm going to be able to sell ice cream off a truck and make money. You know, I know I'll be able to pay everyone back. So I just kept going. And I had this really beautiful business plan. It was 60 pages. And at this time, I lived in Greenpoint with Laura O'Neill, who at that time we were in a relationship. Now we're just co-founders and best friends on earth.
I want to come back to that in a minute.
So it was her and I, my brother Peter, and our friend, one of my best friends, Ben Colombo, all living in this apartment on Driggs Avenue and McGinnis in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. So I got $2,500 here, $5,000 here, $15,000 from a college professor, $15,000 from one of Laura's best friends from Australia. My dad put in $25,000. So we cobbled together only $60,000. So we tried to raise $250,000. We only raised $60,000. And that was enough not to buy a new truck, mm-hmm. because just the new truck before you turned it into an ice cream truck would have been $70,000. We bought two used post office trucks on eBay. One was $5,000
on eBay. You bought them on eBay?
We bought them on eBay. It was click, click, deliver it here. They arrive on a truck. And one was $2,500. One was $5,000. We found someone in Astoria, Queens to retrofit them into ice cream trucks. Mm. All the credit cards were maxed out, everything. Day one, we probably had, you know, $500 in our bank accounts collectively. What I find really striking about what we were able to do with $60,000 18 years ago is I have so much more experience now. I know so much more about business. I am 50 times more sophisticated in every business department. Yet I don't think I could do half of what I did then with $60,000 with even $500,000 today.
Why is that?
It's a weird phenomenon.
Yeah.
I think part of it is age. When you're that young, you know, there's a different kind of energy. Part of it isn't age, but it's just the hunger and the pressure to have to do it. But I mean, what we accomplished with that, like the website we built, the graphic design we did, the marketing, the product development, I'm struck by how much we could do with so little.
Hmm.
But I think this phenomenon, you know, you see it in business. This is why the Unilevers, the Nestles cannot do what we did, you know, cannot start it, even with all of the resources in the world. Like when you get big, your brain changes. You become good at running big organizations, but harder at starting something in a scrappy way.
So you've got 60 grand, two trucks, you got $500 left. How do you get to market?
Getting to day one was hard. You needed a special permit to vend in New York City, a mobile vending permit.
Mm-hmm. And are you manufacturing in a home kitchen at this point?
We're manufacturing in a co-packer in upstate New York.
Okay.
Because we didn't have any money to buy these
hundreds
of thousands of dollars in ice cream making equipment.
And had you done recipe testing? Had you, where were you in your product development?
We had done incredibly extensive and exhaustive recipe testing. So we tested, for example, over 50 different chocolate recipes with 15 different kinds of chocolate, different levels of everyone. We narrowed it down to 10. So I think we had 10 chocolates that we loved. We had 10 vanillas. We had 5 mint chips. We had 7 gingers, probably 100 flavors. And we invited 50 people over to our apartment. And
this is the greatest party ever.
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah.
And we had everybody fill out surveys. What do you like? What do you like? What do you like? So we did really, really rigorous, you know, market testing for no money. If Van Leeuwen were to attempt to do that now in a regular way, that study would cost $30,000, $40,000.
All right. So you're waiting on the permit.
We're waiting on the permit.
You've got a co-packing location upstate. Yeah,
every week we're going to try to get the permit, but then the person doesn't show up. So it's really discouraging. And then finally, after 6 weeks of doing this, it's late June. It's almost July. So we like missed those great spring months. You know, you have 4 months of really, really good sales. And then finally, I think it was June 21st, we get our permit. And we are so excited. So we get the permit on this first truck and we parked on the corner of Green and Prince in Soho. Uh-huh. And by the time we opened the window, there was like a line of 15 people. Huh. The truck looked really nice. It had this beautiful, solid butcher block counter. So it had a homier feel than most food trucks. And we were serving 10 flavors of ice cream. So Hudson Valley Red Currant, Sicilian Pistachio, a really good Michel Clazel chocolate. And that was day one. But it worked, I think, because of the distinctness of the truck. And then people were happy to have a product, I think, that was so clean label. Not because of the label Red Clean, but because I really still believe like the best ice cream is made with just milk, cream, sugar, eggs, and, you know, a little bit of salt, but nothing else.
Did you come back to that location the very next day? Did that become the truck
that
location?
That became the location for, I think, our first 3 or 4 years. It was Green and Prince every day from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m., 6 p.m. And then Soho would kind of die because it was mostly retail driven. Then we would drive up to University and 12th Street, University and 12th or 11th in Greenwich Village, and stay there till midnight.
Still ahead, how Ben Van Leeuwen earned billions of media impressions with some seriously unexpected ice cream flavors.
Meet Jeff Plotner, Capital One business customer and co-founder of Brackish, a handcrafted accessories brand in Charleston, South Carolina.
My business partner, Ben, had some turkey feathers laying around and he was about to get married. He put two and two together and designed this first turkey feather bow tie. That's how it all started.
Jeff and his co-founder had made great strides with their unique men's accessories line, but the call to expand was growing too loud to ignore.
We were having interactions with our customers telling us, you need to come out with a women's line. We were talking on the phone with Alex Parker from Capital One. He said, I love Brackish. I've been wearing Brackish bow ties for a couple years now.
Expanding into women's accessories would be a hefty investment Jeff could not carry alone. But the encouraging conversation with Alex at Capital One Business helped take the Brackish brand to the next level.
You get stuck in your day-to-day. It takes people from the outside to be able to see what they need to help you with. Alex at Capital One was one of those people. This wasn't just a business transaction. This was a relationship that would genuinely help our business. We worked hard to design some women's accessories, and we were blown away by the response.
To learn more, go to CapitalOne.com/businesscards. What if the world's most powerful business tech was within your reach? AWS is the cloud platform trusted by today's fastest scaling startups. From data storage to machine learning to app hosting, AWS helps you build faster, smarter, and more securely. And right now, eligible startups can receive up to $100,000 in AWS credits to turn bold ideas into real momentum. If you're looking to scale your startup, this is your launchpad. Go to startups.aws.
If you're in private capital, you understand that your next great deal starts with who you know. That's why over 3,000 firms trust Affinity, the CRM platform purpose-built for private capital. Affinity's relationship intelligence reveals your team's strongest paths to founders, investors, and decision makers using insights hidden in emails, calendars, and meetings. With powerful AI tools like Affinity Note Taker and Deal Assist, you'll spend less time managing data and more time closing the right deals. Learn more at affinity.co/marketplace. Welcome back to Masters of Scale. You can find this conversation and more on our YouTube channel. Van Leeuwen started as a family business. Ben's co-founders were his brother Pete and his then-girlfriend Laura O'Neill. Ben and Laura got married the same week they started the company in 2008. They divorced a few years later, but they remain co-founders. She now describes him as a best friend and business soulmate. Let's talk about Laura for a second. You went on to marry Laura.
Yes.
We had Esther Perel on the show recently, and she talks about how 65% of startups that fail because of co-founder relationships falling apart. You and Laura ended up getting divorced, but you talk about her as your best friend. You've remained business partners. For a lot of people divorced, this is hard to imagine. How have you managed to make this work?
I mean, it wasn't hard at all. It was effortless. I mean, we were very young when we got married. Laura's from Australia, but we wanted to continue running the business together. We were really excited about it. And we just continued being great friends and doing things together. Laura and her partner, Greg, who are like my family, have a four-year-old. I'm super close with her. I mean, we're best friends, but also like family.
Was there a concern when you guys were separating on the personal side that would affect the business side?
Zero concern.
Wow. Yeah.
I do hear about the stories of founder strife. Working with my brother, it's not always easy. With all that said, the three of us are so aligned in our work ethic and knowing that we're never going anywhere. Not because it's easy, right? You know, there's days where I'm like, is this worth it? Like, is it worth it trying to build, you know, 200 ice cream stores in the next 2.5 years? But with that said, we're completely similar in our alignment on wanting to grow in our work ethic. I imagine that's what would make it hard. You know, if one founder said, you know, I'm going to take 6 months off and travel the world, which is awesome. Nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
But I think we're fortunate that there we're completely aligned. So there's never been a question of, is this person working hard? Does this person want to grow it in this way? I mean, the problems I have with, you know, co-founders being my brother and Laura are that because we're so close, there's no filter, right? Mm-hmm. Generally, the fights, particularly with Peter and I, are over, I don't like the tone that you took in that email, you know? And it's like, you know, we're really not fighting over the big stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it clear early on who would do what in this three-way partnership?
No.
So how did you sort that out?
How did we sort that out? Again, I don't remember the hard stuff. We kind of all did everything early on. I always felt kind of silly saying CEO when we were like a little business with a few trucks. I started calling myself the CEO when, I don't know, when we hit like a few hundred employees. Mm-hmm. Before that, there were no titles. Just we're running the business, we're the founders. As we've grown, the responsibilities are delineated. With that said, it's pretty fluid. I mean, we're growing at 30 to 40% a year. So nothing stays the same. The challenges change every year.
Yeah. I mean, 30 to 40% a year off of a pretty good size base now. How big is the business today?
So in 2025, we started with 70 corporate-owned scoop shops. Mm-hmm. We'll open 35 this year. So we'll actually grow 50% on our scoop shop footprint this year. Wholesale is in 15,000 doors with over 50 SKUs. By July, we'll hit about 2,000 total team members. Most
at the retail
those teams
locations.
Are in the retail stores. So growing rapidly.
Yeah. How did you guys grow off of those two trucks?
By the second summer, we had 6 trucks. And then in the third year, an opportunity to open a brick and mortar arose, which was not part of our plan.
Why not?
We loved the truck model. You could get a truck going for $60,000. There was no rent. You could put it wherever you want. As I'm saying this, why would you ever do brick and mortar, right? Trucks sound so much better. You do brick and mortar because they do a lot more revenue and they're a lot easier to operate. And somehow we got this store open, which was one block from where we lived. for like $22,000. It was 96 square feet. It was a very small store.
But you didn't need much more than that because people can line up outside. And
exactly. And yeah. To us, wow, this is much bigger than a truck, right? Uh-huh. Bigger than the 30 square feet. Within 3 hours, we said we're never building another truck.
Really?
Yeah.
Because?
This was Greenpoint, Brooklyn, 14, 15 years ago.
Okay.
So not nearly as affluent or even residentially dense as it is now. Mm-hmm. And that store in 3 hours had already done the revenue that our best truck location would do an entire day.
Why? What was different about it?
There's just something different about brick and mortar. Like it, I think it looms in the consciousness of the consumer in a bigger way.
And so was that the moment where you said, we're going to plow into brick and mortar?
We wanted to plow as much as we could with no outside capital.
Okay. Because you wanted to stay in control of the business or?
We wanted to stay in control. We didn't want to sell equity. I think the other part is like, we knew we weren't good enough yet to really scale. Mm. We were pretty good, right? But had we scaled then, you know, had in year three, someone said, here's $5 million, you know, which would have been enough to open 10, 15 stores. Those stores would not be the way we want them to be now.
Right. You wanted to learn more and get better. I love this because so much of what we talk about with entrepreneurs is you jump off a cliff and you build the plane on the way down, right? And getting started, it kind of sounds like that's a little bit of what you were doing. Like, we're just going to figure it out. But then you took a more measured approach to scale. It was, okay, we've got this going. We've got some traction. We clearly have some product market fit. But we want to hone this and get much better at this before we try to jump on a rocket ship or build a rocket ship. It feels like there are a couple of possible inflection points here, right? One is growing brick and mortar. The other is going into wholesale. And for anyone who's ever looked at the frozen foods market, it's tough, right? I mean, especially ice cream, it's like, it's heavy to ship. You got to keep it frozen. You can't not do that. Talk us through how you all evolved, where you were starting to see that this could be a much bigger business.
It never feels like we took a leap, actually. Mm. I mean, it feels like we're taking a leap this year, going from 70 to 105 stores in, you know, a single year. Until this year, it was kind of slow and steady. Wholesale, we did not plan on going into, but our first day in business in New York City, somebody from Whole Foods approached the truck and asked us if we did wholesale. And what we did early on, and we still do it to this extent, is, you know, we say yes to everything. You know, now it's we say yes to every meeting that might sound interesting. You never know what's going to come of it. So we said yes to wholesale. But yeah, to what you just pointed out, wholesale is a much harder business. If we didn't have the brick and mortar, I don't know where we'd be because that has subsidized the wholesale business many, many years. Hmm. Just looking at my wholesale P&L today, which like will be not surprising to anyone with any literacy around selling frozen CPG products, you know, the margins are absolutely razor thin.
Why are they so thin? For folks who haven't been in this
fulfillment
category.
Fulfillment cost. Fulfillment means just moving the product around. Trade spend, which is not unique to ice cream, but ice cream is really competitive. Mm-hmm. Who has all of the market share? You know, the Ben & Jerry's, the Häagen-Dazs, Talenti, and they are, of course, as efficient as you can possibly be from a fulfillment standpoint, from a trade spend standpoint, and from a COG standpoint, right? Their manufacturing as efficiently as possible. So that makes the CPG business, you know, really just a game of scale.
Was there a moment on the Van Leeuwen journey where you thought you might not make it?
Never a moment where we thought we wouldn't make it, just because I'm really optimistic and I knew we could. But plenty of tough moments, you know, where we were about to run out of money. I mean, I celebrate Christmas and Hanukkah, but a week before Christmas, maybe, gosh, probably only like 10 years ago, there was no finance team. I did the books. And I said, wait a minute. We're going to be negative $200,000 in a week. And I'm like,
not a good moment.
Yeah, not a good moment. I don't know how we got here, but that's not going to work, right? We did not have any bank relationships. There was no way to borrow money. Somehow, through a little bit of Googling, you know, I found a nice 34% hard money loan.
Wow.
You know, approved in 24 hours. You know, money was in the bank by Christmas. And it saved the day. But yeah, it was super stressful. But even then, because before that, maybe a month or two before that, we had turned down an offer to sell 15% of the business for $250,000. I was not like capital market savvy then, but I was still like, yeah, I don't like that. That mm-hmm. doesn't seem like a good idea. So borrowing this money that I knew I could pay back in a year and a half, this is a lot cheaper.
Yeah, right. So Ben, you all sort of famously have not spent heavily on marketing. And one of the ways you all have built the brand is through some really creative collaborations. Where did those start and what are some of your favorite ones?
We sort of fell into learning about how collaborations can help you build brand awareness. The first big collaboration we ever did was Kraft Mac and Cheese. It was right as the pandemic was ending, and their marketing agency in New York City called us. And I was talking to someone there, and she said, "Do you want to do this?" And I actually said, "Absolutely." I was like, "This is going to be awesome. This is a no-brainer." I thought the juxtaposition would be really cool of this sort of classic American product with this small artisanal ice cream, also in a shocking way, right? If it was a classic American dessert mass market, it's too obvious,
yeah.
right?
It's yeah, it's like, too on the nose.
And we're really strict with our, we call them ingredient guardrails, mm-hmm. but it was actually a clean label product, which I didn't know. I don't eat a lot of Kraft mac and cheese, but you know, colored with turmeric and annatto, salt, cultured milk powder, you know, cheese powder. And it was really good, kind of weird tasting flavor, but still tasty. And we launched that flavor on our website. And within, you know, minutes, the website had crashed. And, you know, I think within 10 minutes, they'd all sold instantly. Huh. I think 12 billion media impressions, whatever that means. Does it help the brand? I actually don't know.
Did you get a ton of inbound after that from other brands saying, "We want to do a version of this with you"?
We got a ton of inbound.
Yeah.
And we actually started partnering in a way with bigger brands where they would pay us to do flavors.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of a win-win. I mean, we're still super selective. The ingredients had to make sense. I'm glad we did it. You know, we'll continue to be open to crazy collaborations like that. But it's not core to us. You know, New York Times last year, Wirecutter, called Van Leeuwen Vanilla the best vanilla ice cream in the country. That made us really happy.
I understand that gimmicky, media-driven ideas aren't necessarily the ones that, like, you're excited about, want to do, but can I throw a couple brands at you and see what, just off the top of your head?
Yeah, absolutely.
If Spirit Airlines came to you and said, "We want to do a collab," what are you immediately pitching Spirit Airlines as the flavor you want to do with them?
Oh my God. What am I immediately pitching to Spirit Airlines? I would do something that would be artisanal and middle American.
Uh-huh.
So like smoked hay ice cream.
Oh yeah. Cause you get the yellow in there with the Spirit logo.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Different Spirit, Spirit Halloween, the costume store.
I mean, let's try to not do the obvious, right? The obvious would be like a pumpkin ice cream colored with more turmeric and then a charcoal ice cream, which we've done. So this orange and black. The less obvious, we would do like a butterfly pea flower ube, you know, really purple ice cream.
Nice.
Swirled with a bitter dandelion green ice cream that we add more chlorophyll to make it bright green. So you have like green and purple, like liquid sort of, yeah.
Okay, last one. LinkedIn. Dude. LinkedIn ice cream.
So something really boring. What's cardboard made of? Yeah.
I mean, sure. Why not?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. I love it. If we were sitting down a few years from now, what do you imagine the conversation we're having about where the business has gone between, let's say, 2025 and 2028, 29, 30? What's the growth trajectory you're hoping to achieve?
2-3 years from now, we anticipate we'll be at around 200 stores. We hope there'll be a lot of international presence then too.
Are you international right now or not yet?
We do have one location in Singapore.
Uh-huh.
That was our little franchise test. And what excites me most, just from a "this is what I enjoy doing, this is fun" standpoint, is innovation. So I hope we'll have even more new flavors that are really popular and more innovations even beyond flavors. So different kinds of product offerings in the scoop shops, always that incorporate ice cream, but we're opening, which I'm very excited for, the Van Leeuwen Flavor Lab.
What's that?
But the Flavor Lab is an innovation kitchen where our entire innovation team will work out of, and a tasting room. And then in the front is an ice cream shop, and everything's separated by these cool retractable glass walls. So you see through the entire space. So all of the innovation now will happen at the point of sale where our guests come in, not just for show, but what we realized was like, not only getting immediate feedback, you know, making a new flavor and saying, let's put it out there and see what people think. But there's something about making the products where you're serving the products that just for me, like cultivates better ideas, more excitement, brings out people's passion more. So I think we'll be even more successful at innovating out of that space.
Ben, thank you for being on Masters of Scale.
Thanks for having me.
After spending time with Ben Van Leeuwen, it's clear why the company has been such a success. Their humble, hardworking mindset allows them to balance high-quality products with innovative brand growth and a slow and steady approach to scale. Also, the ice cream is undeniably delicious. If you haven't had the chocolate caramel cheesecake, you have no idea what you're missing. I'm Jeff Berman. Thank you for listening.
This is Emily Warden, Capital One Business customer and owner of Emily Warden Designs, a bespoke fine jewelry store that quickly gained buzz after opening its doors in Richmond, Virginia.
My customer base grew exponentially once we had a storefront. We had one engagement ring case at the time, and we had lines out the door every weekend.
As her storefront continued to have record sales, Emily knew it was time to up-level production.
We normally just purchase diamonds in very small batches or per order. So we wanted to invest in not just one or two pieces, but a collection of natural diamonds.
Emily knew creating a collection would be a big investment, but with the help of her Capital One business card, she was ready to bet on herself and bet big.
It was about $40,000, $45,000 all in up front. Having the Capital One card was definitely reassuring to be able to make such a large investment purchase. And of course, to get the cash back that came with it.
To learn more, go to CapitalOne.com/business cards.
Is your AI built for everyone, or is it built to work with the tools your business relies on? IBM's AI agents are tailored to your business and can easily integrate with the tools you're already using, so they can work across your business, not just some parts of it. Get started with AI agents at IBM.com. The AI built for business. IBM. Masters of Scale is a Wait What original. Our executive producer is Eve Tro. Our senior producer is Trisha Bobita. The production team includes Masha Makotunina and Brandon Klein. Our senior talent executive is Stephanie Stern. Mixing and mastering by Aaron Bastinelli and Brian Pugh. Original music by Ryan Holiday. Our head of podcasts is Lital Molad. Visit mastersofscale.com to find the transcript for this episode and to subscribe to our newsletter. Hey folks, Jeff Berman here. We are gathering the leaders who are building what's next at the Masters of Scale Summit. You'll see visionaries like Chobani's Hamdi Ulukaya, restaurateur David Chang, Patagonia's Ryan Gellert, Promise's Phaedra Ellis-Lampkins, the National Women's Soccer League's Jessica Berman. The list goes on and on. Please join us October 7th to 9th in San Francisco. The room is filling up fast, so apply now at mastersofscale.com/apply25. That's mastersofscale.com/apply25.